Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today, it is my pleasure to have a return guest to the podcast, Devon Taylor. Devon Taylor is an accomplished American novelist and entrepreneur specializing in business relations. As a burgeoning author, he debuted with the enchanting children's fantasy novel, Icarus Finds His Power. His latest work, Trajectory Volume 1, is an inspiring collection featuring 17 authors from diverse backgrounds who share their powerful stories of trials, tribulations, and life-changing advice. In this volume, Taylor also tells of his personal journey of becoming a parent overnight and the struggles that accompanied this profound transformation, offering a unique perspective on overcoming adversity. In addition to his literary pursuits, Taylor is a sought-after keynote speaker and the host of the Devon Taylor Podcast, a platform dedicated to showcasing remarkable stories and diverse voices from across the globe. Residing in the Inland Empire within Riverside County, Taylor shares his life with his four cherished adopted children, Olivia, aged 18, Damon, aged 14, Tina, aged 10, and Noah, aged 9. Their bustling household also includes 6 dogs, 3 cats, and a lively array of relatives. So I can imagine, Devon, there's never a dull moment in your household.
Every time I hear that part of my story, the 6 dogs, the 3 cats, it feels like it's so much, but it's really just, you know, our home. It's become our lives. So yeah, that's us in a nutshell, just a big, happy family, I guess.
And that includes our 4-legged friends who provide us with so much unconditional love, joy, companionship. They are as intricate a part of our family as our human relatives are. And as somebody who has been a cat lover most of my life, the 3 cats resonated with me, but I'm also a dog lover. So any type of animal, I think, is one of the closest things to God's creation. Mm-hmm. And can show us unconditional love when in many cases we can't show that to ourselves or others.
Animals are our biggest teachers. I feel like that's one of the main reasons why I've always been attracted to dogs or having animals in my home. So, you know, when the kids moved in, we had just my two dogs and our 1 cat. And just naturally, after the kids came, the dogs started having babies and we had litters. And so for a long time in our home, it was just filled with so much abundance of life. And that's a direct reflection of just like how my life has changed since the kids have been around. Like, we've just been experiencing life on a completely different level.
I can imagine that transformation may sometimes be day to day, week to week, depending on what's going on. But it's certainly one of the things about transformation is that it's ongoing. We're always in that constant state of evolution, personally, as a parent, and with other categories of our life. So, as I mentioned, you're a repeat offender on the podcast, so to speak. We were episode 105. We talked about your journey from volleyball as a volleyball coach to becoming a foster parent overnight to 4 children and now an adoptive parent to 4 children. And we talked about the whole transition from volleyball coach to parent. So I wanted to have you back so we could kind of take it a step further and really maybe just talk about some of the things your children have taught you, what you feel you have taught them, some advice that you may have for individuals who want to become adoptive or foster parents. So this, I think, hopefully will be a good part 2 to the first podcast that we had. So Whenever you're ready, Devon, I'll hit you with the questions.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm excited. It's funny being in this position and talking about foster care and adoption, because it's not something that necessarily I ever thought I would be doing. So now that I'm in the position, and now that I'm a father, my friend, I was on the phone with my friend the other day, and I was just telling her how the kids forgot their karate outfit, so I've got to go take them to them. And she just started laughing, and I was like, what? And she goes, you're just a dad now, and it's so different. And I'm like, that's my life. So yeah, I'm ready whenever you are. I'm happy to help in any way I can.
And I appreciate that. I know my listeners will appreciate it as well. So my first question, now for those who may not have listened to our first podcast, please tell our listeners who Devon Taylor was before becoming a foster parent and who Devon Taylor is now.
Wow. So, I mean, a lot has changed since I've become a foster parent. And I'll just start from the beginning. Before I became a foster parent, I was living alone. Well, not alone, with my mom. We had bought a house. I was commuting from Riverside to Long Beach because I was coaching at the time. That was my passion. I had grown up playing volleyball. And so naturally being able to transition into coaching was something that felt super right to me. It felt like I was on my path to doing what I was supposed to be doing. During that time while I was coaching, I received a call. My mom was pretty upset. We had found out that my nieces and nephews that we have adopted now were in a terrible situation. They had been taken from their home. They had nowhere to go. And so we had to make a decision right then and there. We decided to take them in as fosters. But with that decision, me and my mom had to kind of make an even quicker decision on who was going to be the caretaker. So she had been in her career for 17 years. I had just started mine. And it didn't really make sense to pull her out of hers because she was going to retire soon. So she decided to stay working for Disneyland and finishing her time there while I gave up my career coaching, which I know sounds crazy to a lot of people. And to me, it sounded crazy at the time because it really wasn't something that I saw myself doing, like I said earlier. But life happens and things change. And so I felt I had to step up in a way and become their parent and just kind of help them along the way as they were getting, you know, accommodated to us and accommodated to this new home and being raised by their uncle. So it was a very tumultuous time because we were going through so much. I had never raised kids before that. Obviously my mom had, but she was pretty much done, you know, and having to come, you know, relive that or restart that was, I think, a little bit of a struggle for her at first. But now, I mean, since we've fostered them, now they're adopted. Because of them, I was able to write my first children's book. It was really inspired by their resilience and just like what they were going through and how they were surviving life. And I thought in that moment, as I'm watching them, raising them and trying to figure out myself in that moment, because, you know, I'm going through a redefining moment with my careers, it just ignited something in me that had always been there, but never really something I believed I could do. And because I had them now, it was something that I needed to act on in my mind. You know, you have these kids here, you've got goals. We don't talk about them. How can we ever expect them to go after their goals and talk about their goals and accomplish the things that they want? So it became a mission of mine to publish my book. It became a mission of my family. My partner at the time was really supportive in just getting that connection with the publisher. And then once we had the connection with the publisher, things just started moving. Next thing you know, I'm speaking at Naples about the book. I'm promoting the book everywhere I go. It just completely changed my life. And since we've published the book, we've published the second one with my partner, and the kids have even ideas of publishing their own books. So it's a completely different atmosphere here now. And I'm super grateful that I followed my heart and followed my passion to write this book, Chris Finds Its Power, because it's just changed the trajectory of where the kids are going, where I'm going, and how we want to impact this world. So that's my story in a nutshell. If you guys didn't catch the first episode, But yeah, that's kind of where we're at now. We're all in this creative space and trying to push each other creatively and just really, I guess, really trying to live in our purpose, even the kids, you know? So it just feels really, really great to see them at that point of being fostered to now being adopted and living the life that they want to live.
Well, you played a big role in that by modeling, you know, purposeful living, modeling, you know, continued growth and evolution and doing something that's going to leave a lasting legacy. Obviously, you've passed that on to your children. And the other thing is that, you know, we talk about adverse childhood experiences, you know, things that happen like early on divorce or abuse, and early experience matters. The sooner that we can help children in early adolescents or teenagers rewrite that narrative of their early experience and realize that they are more than their early experience, that they can transcend that. We have done more than done our job as parents, and we are creating a world that was probably beyond their imagination, considering the world that they came from earlier. And if we can do that and we can pass that type of positive energy and help our children, empower our children to co-create the life of their choosing in conjunction with the universe, we've done our job as parents.
I agree 100%. And there's a lot of critiques out there. You know, there's a lot of people that would say, oh, I would do it this way, I would do it that way. Like one, you know, for example, we homeschool the three younger ones, and a lot of people don't necessarily agree with that. And it's been a struggle, even within our family, close relatives. But the way I see it is, like you said, as long as we're modeling something that's just showing that we're present with life, present with what's going on around us, present with our goals, you know, you're going to help your kids or anyone that's around you find the same kind of resemblance. And I've noticed it in the kids that they just have deeper goals than a lot of the kids that, you know, that are their age. And I can't say that it's all me, because they're really great kids. I really lucked out. But yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I do think it does have a lot to do with just what I've modeled and them choosing for themselves. Like, is this something that I want to do? Is this something I want to follow? Is my uncle successful in a way that makes him happy, you know, versus like monetarily happy? Like, I feel pretty complete, and I think they can feel that. So they want the same for their lives when they get older and for their kids and, you know, for whatever they create. So I'm happy to be that springboard. And that's honestly why I felt it was so important for me to step up, because they needed that. You know, they weren't getting that with their situation before, or, you know, the people that were raising them before. And so just as a responsibility as a parent, I knew that was important for me to do, to step up in that big way. So thank you for noticing that.
You're welcome. And the other thing is that with, as far as the homeschooling piece, as an educator myself, there are some students that don't respond to the conventional course or path of education, you know, from like middle school to high school to college. It's not a linear path for every child. And we have to respect individual differences and look at the situation and say, maybe homeschooling is better for this child as opposed to another child who wants to take a traditional path. Now, I had three children of my own, and each one of them took a different path to education, but they all reached their goals. And it's because they were different. They had different interests. They had different perceptions on what schooling was for them. And as parents, my wife and I needed to respect that and honor that and nurture that and empower them to forge the path that they chose for themselves.
I love that you said that too, respecting them. That's really important to me. And I feel like it's made such a big difference in just our relationships. It's just showing that mutual respect. And a lot of the idea of homeschooling came from the kids. They wanted to experience that and see for themselves if it was something that they would like. And, you know, it's been different for each one. And, you know, like Damon's going to be going to high school next year, so he wants to go back to school. And I'm totally supportive of that. Like, I'm here for you in whatever ways that you need. And I feel like just because we have that mutual respect, it's just a different environment. And I feel grateful to be around the kids when I know they're happy, you know, and even when they're sad, but it's a different feeling when you know that they respect you and they respect their environment, most importantly.
Well, and even when they're sad, they have a steadying force. They know that you're going to be a listener. You're mm-hmm. going to help them make a decision that's going to be best for them. You're going to give them options. You're going to give them resources. They know right. that you're a steady presence. So even in their worst moments or their sad moments, they know that they have you to go to because of that stable presence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I agree. Not to judge how I grew up in any capacity. I know my parents tried their best and did what they could. But I always knew that if I were to become a parent, I would be doing it a little bit different. And I'm just to speak to any parents that are going through that transition of becoming a parent, like when you're telling yourself, you know, I'm going to be different than my parent or I'm going to do it differently for my kids. Those are really great intentions to have because I can tell you firsthand that these kids appreciate having me as a, how do I say it? Like a person they can talk to, someone they can confide in, you know, grandma's a little different, you know, grandma's a little bit more strict, grandma's a little bit more old school, you know? And so they've got, you know, they got the old school discipline from her, but they've got the more open-mindedness, creative, I guess you could say, uncle that's here for them as well. So I know it creates like a pretty good balance between what I grew up in versus what I feel the kids deserve.
You know, I think we all want to do it differently than our parents for a lot of different reasons. Even if we came from a relatively healthy household, we see things that, geez, I want to do this different as a parent. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But what I've also discovered is that as I've gotten older, I've appreciated the lessons that my mother has taught me. Yeah. And in terms of how I deal with my adult children now, it's not only what I've learned through them and what I've learned as my role as a parent, but also what I've learned from my mother, whose lessons now become more and more profound to me as I get older. And in hindsight, it's always 20/20, but looking back, I realize that my mother did a heck of a job, considering she had to raise me as a single parent. And hindsight has allowed me to appreciate that more than I did when I was younger.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and like I said, it's a good balance for me, like when I send them to grandma's and she's got the parenting role, you know, she takes over. I love it. I think that it's needed. Like they need to see a different side. They need to have more opinions, I guess, between us. And when we don't necessarily agree, it gives me an opportunity to get closer to my mom and talk to her and to create more of a synergy versus like, you know, a battle. And that wasn't always the case, you know, like when we first took them in, it was really hard for me to accept the way that my mom wanted to discipline them or to correct them. And it was a battle. That was something that I can look back on now and say, I wish that I would have been a little bit more receptive, or at least where I'm at now with it. But everything happens for a reason. And it was essential for us to go through those growing pains, especially since we hadn't raised kids together before, you know, like I'm her son. So that's not really the idea. But when it was put in our laps and it became our responsibility to be their parents, it then became our responsibility to be cohesive in what we were doing and to really create a plan that we both felt great about. So, yeah, I'm beyond grateful for what my mom does for not only me, but for the kids and for their future. And, you know, she's been a big supporter of me and everything that I've done and just has always been there for me. I can't say that I appreciate her enough. There are not enough words to describe the appreciation I have for her.
Well, the elders in our society have a lot to teach the younger generation. And I also believe the younger generation has a lot to teach the elders. I think it goes both ways.
Yeah. I agree, yeah.
Now, Devon, for those who wish to become foster parents, what are some skills that they need to develop to prepare for and embrace that transition?
So I love this question because when you become a parent overnight, it's not something that you necessarily think about and feel that like, you know, oh, now I'm an expert, but I feel that I've gotten some experience under the belt, so for me personally, the biggest thing that I think as a foster parent, to have is patience. Unlike families that are organically having babies and growing them from small to big, and you get to see them grow and learn their personalities and whatnot. When you're adopting, you're kind of just jumping right in. And especially with kids that are of different ages, and it's a lot of different personalities coming at once. And there's not a lot of like growth in between. Obviously they're going to grow with you, you know, at whatever age they're at, but it's very fast paced when it comes to the emotional component of being a parent. So having patience was something that was super, super big to me. I can't stress that enough. We've been through so many situations where it was just, you know, I didn't know the kids, they didn't know me, and we might have overreacted in the situation. And I think if we had just practiced a little bit more patience, a little bit more understanding, I think we would have had an easier time at the beginning, because things moved out real quickly once we were able to apply that idea. But it's not easy at first, because you're getting to know someone essentially and seeing how compatible you are and how the relationship is working. So patience is a super important skill to have when you're raising kids, especially as a foster parent. I would also say having creativity. You don't realize how creative you have to be when you're a parent, just in general, you know, when it comes to keeping the kids entertained, finding them activities, listening to them and their emotional, you know, emotional woes. There's a lot that comes with just having to cater to their basic needs. And I feel what really helped me at the time when we were taking them in was being creative myself and then sharing that with them. Because once we started kind of exploring the book and the idea of the book, we actually went to the lake. We went to Lake Paris and we all sat down and we were doing vision boards. And on my vision board, I was just writing over and over, I want to write a book, I want to write a book, and just different versions of that. And my nephew was like, wow, you really want to write a book, huh? And it was just like, yeah, I do. I just feel like it's in me. I feel like this is something that is going to be super powerful. I feel like we could do it together. And he was like, that's a good idea. I can draw the character. And it just started like forming from there. Him drawing the main character, and then my niece drawing another character, and then me coming up with like some idea with the characters they're drawing. And it just, you know, brought us that much more together. Now that Icarus Finding His Power is here, it just feels so surreal to have created something with the kids and brought this character to life. And now people can enjoy it. And I hear stories of other families sharing that. So it just feels I feel super grateful for the opportunity to not only be able to create something, but to create it with the kids. I think creativity is just another important aspect when it comes to becoming a foster parent. I think honesty is probably the most important thing. To be honest with yourself, be honest with your partner, be honest with your kids, be honest with anyone that's involved in the situation. The more honest you are, the more the conversations become a lot easier and flow better. And it just becomes that much more personal for you. You know, I personally can say that me and each one of the kids have a different type of relationship where they understand me, I understand them. And it just calls me to be that much more present with them, especially when we're going through tough stuff. You know, we've been through some pretty tough things over here. It hasn't always been peaches and creams, but we've always been honest with each other. And I think that's really helped keep the idea that I'm on their side with the kids, because I know parents can struggle at times when it comes, you know, as your kids are growing, going into high school, you know, hormones are going, things start to change. They start to, you know, be influenced by the people that are around them, you know, at school, and it can get hard. And I've seen it in other households. You know, I saw it in my household when my brothers were teenagers. And so I've noticed, you know, Olivia's about to graduate high school, which is, oh, it's so crazy. But she's about to graduate high school. And I've noticed that there's never been a change with the way that we communicate. If anything, she communicates more, and she'll, you know, text me in the middle of the night or call me on FaceTime. And I'm like, Olivia, I'm in another room. But it's so great to have that, like connection, that relationship with the kids, and it's all built on honesty, you know? But if I were to say anything else, I would say the last thing that I would say for becoming a foster parent, so I'd say patience, creativity, honesty, I would say organization. And that it's in every aspect. I mean, I didn't realize how much you have to do when you become a foster parent, because it's not just doctor visits, not just dentist visits, not just being at the school with the teachers and meeting them. You're meeting the social workers, you're updating the social worker on everything that's happening with the kid. You're giving them the information from the doctors. You're giving them information as far as, you know, if they have therapy sessions, how those are going, if there's any like incidents that have happened, how did you handle the incident? What's, you know, what you're going to do moving forward. There's a ton of paperwork. So the best skill that I have, which is trying to be organized, really came in handy when it came to handling all of those different scenarios, because it's not something that I knew. I didn't really research beforehand, like what happens when you become a foster parent, but I wish I would have, because it would have prepared me for the idea of so much paperwork, so many check-ins, just like being on cue for them. And even the transition from foster to adoption, like there were so many more meetings, doctor's visits, psychological visits, just so many more people in and out of our house to really create the case to have them adopted. And that was not stressful, but it was a lot. And I know the kids were overwhelmed at some points. So me having my things organized and just knowing where everything is, getting my Google Calendar set so that we're not missing appointments. It was a lot of organizing and a lot of putting things in the right places. So I would definitely say that's something as a foster parent to be prepared for. You're going to have to be organized with your things and just know where things are at and be prepared to, you know, communicate that with your social worker, whatever it may be. But organization is super key. So those are the things I would say that are needed when you're becoming a foster parent.
And those are good building blocks, I think, for individuals who are considering making that transition. The other piece, and sometimes the organization piece, some people might think, well, you know, what's the big deal about that? But there's a lot of big deal about that. One, not only are you keeping the flow of information consistent between their external caregivers and yourself, you're giving them some structure. They know that you're reliable. You model reliability, dependence, consistency. And when children come out of one situation into a foster care situation, they're coming out of chaos. They don't need more chaos to experience.
No. Yep.
So just that organization piece in and of itself can be a calming influence on those children that have come out of chaotic situations previously. So I think that's, to me, one of the skills that, in addition to the other ones that you mentioned as building blocks, that skill, I think, of organization needs to be really emphasized because of the personal implications it can have for those children that you're taking care of.
I love that you said that point, because that I didn't even notice that, but noticed it, because it's something that they do too. You know, like Tina, she's my messy one. So let's exclude her when I'm saying this, but everybody else seems to have picked that up for me. You know, like they see how organized I am. They see how detail oriented I am. We never would miss an appointment. We're always on time. Like, they have gotten to see a truly unique side of their uncle, but it's because I care about them and what I feel any parent would do if they were in my position, which is just be there for them, you know, be their confidant, be their rock. And it's something that I didn't even realize, you know, it was just something that was instinctual in me. But as you were saying that, like, yeah, I can see in Damon, who's my 14-year-old, he is extremely organized. He is extremely smart and meticulous where he puts his things and will, you know, get on his younger brother about, you know, you got to clean your side of the room. We got to keep it nice in here. Just the little things, and it makes me so proud to know that I had an influence in that in any way. So thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. And I think when they see that type of consistency, it makes them feel more secure.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
So now the mantra of my podcast is we are all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. What do you believe your children have taught you about being a parent? And what values and skills do you believe they've learned from you and through you?
Ooh. So this question for me, I love it, especially when it's tied to the kids, because it's been a little controversial for me, and I'll explain why. So for me, I've always had this idea of being a good person, and for whatever reason, that's become like a controversial aspect in our house. What is a good person? What do they do? How would you even interpret that? I've made it my mission to try to have my own, I guess, definition of that, not necessarily saying like, oh, a good person is someone that, you know, gives their last dollar, or a good person is someone that is always, you know, thinking about others and not themselves. I've always thought of it as, in trying to mirror this to the kids, a good person is someone that can really see somebody else's position and put themselves in their shoes. And not necessarily, you know, give your last dollar or, you know, not be yourself, but I've always thought that a good person is trying to see somebody else in their shoes, put themselves in that position, and really make decisions based on how they would interpret that, if that makes any sense. And I've always tried to show the kid in some way or another to put yourself in other people's shoes. Like, for example, I was teaching a volleyball class and one of the kids wasn't really like picking up the concepts. And Damon made like kind of a comment, like, how many times do you have to teach them, you know, the same thing? And pulled him to the side and I said, you know, some people learn differently and we have to give them the benefit of the doubt because you never know what's going on. And I think shortly after that, one of the parents came up to me and like noticed that their kid wasn't really doing what everyone else was doing and was apologetic and was like, you know, he has ADHD and that's something that Damon suffers with. So I kind of looked at Damon because he got to hear it and was like, you see, you know, it's not always what we think is going on. You know, some people are going through things or some people have other struggles that may prevent them from being or doing what you're doing. You know, and that doesn't make them a bad person. How do we help them, you know? And so that was my question. How can I help him? How can I assist him? And she said, you know, as much as you are doing, that's really what you can do. And that felt good to me, you know, okay, I'll continue to try to incorporate him as much as possible or look out for him. But it was never about making him bad or, you know, wrong for not contributing or keeping up with the class. It's always about trying to understand people for where they're at and, you know, what they're going through. And I just think it's really important as a person, you know, especially with everything that's going on in the world. I feel strongly, and I like, you know, I don't know your standing on the Gaza, the Palestine war. I feel strongly that when children are dying and being killed, it's just not really, I don't see a reason why we would be doing it. When you're putting yourself in other people's shoes or what they're going through, and if you can come out saying, I don't agree with this, or I think we should be helping them, I think that's the more important lesson that we should be teaching our children. And so that's what I've always tried to instill. It's just making sure that they're coming from a perspective that's not just putting yourself in your own shoes, but thinking about others and making decisions that would benefit everyone, not just themselves, but everyone that's included. And like I said, it's a controversial thing to try to be a good person. But for me and the kids, it's been something that we've used to just be examples in the world, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Gaza, Palestine. Children should not be victims of war, either emotionally or casualties of war. And that's a thing that is heartbreaking to me, that and regardless of what position you've taken with that, we got children on both sides that are victims, and, you know, emotionally and casualties of war. And that's something that breaks my heart every time I hear that. And it's a tough pill for me to swallow, Devon.
I saw an interview with Miss Rachel, who's been speaking out about a lot of what's going on with this war. and she had a little girl on her show who was a double amputee, and just the emotion in the way she was talking without trying to be too emotional, I could tell that it was a lot for her to be around that little girl and to show her support, because it's not something that, at least in my mind, we should be seeing, you know. And I couldn't even, she made a point about, you know, the little girl, I think it was another little girl that had passed away, had, you know, worn a rainbow onesie, and her daughter had the same onesie, and she had to throw the onesie out because she just couldn't even fathom making that connection anymore, because it was just too hard. And it just put in my mind, like, oh my gosh, what if we were there? What if the kids and I were struggling and trying to find safety, and every day was, you know, just a scary situation, and we didn't know if we were going to live or die. Like, I couldn't imagine. And so I just, when I see stuff like that, I instantly put myself in that position and think about what I would do on the other side, you know, or what I would want someone else to do on the other side. And it's a tough situation, especially when children are being hurt, like you said. It just makes it that much more unbearable, I guess. Like, it's just a lot. So,
well, as myself as a parent who's experienced the transition of an adult child, every time I hear of a child death, regardless of the circumstances, that tugs at my heartstrings and brings it home for me. It reminds me of my own situation. And I automatically go into empathy mode, thinking these parents are going to be in for a world of challenge now. Because they're confronting every parent's worst nightmare. And it's like, I always think, how are they going to transcend it? How are they going to get through it? How are they going to reengage in living again? And our actions do have consequences. Mm-hmm. And there are consequences of war. And sometimes the consequences are more dire and more wide-reaching than we even realize.
I'm hopeful that people like Miss Rachel, myself, anyone that's speaking up against it, continue to do so, amplify the voices that are going through any type of war, especially when there's children involved. I feel really called as of lately to start speaking on stuff like that. It really just hit home knowing that I have kids. Even before me having kids, I've always felt called to protect the youth. And it's just crazy, like, you know, like, just thinking about some of the things that I'm going through, not my life per se, but just like some of the things that I've heard, it's crazy how that's not the norm. Like, people are not always caring for kids, and there are some people that are out there that have completely different intentions. And it's just sad to me, because the children are just our heart, you know. They're the heart of and soul of our communities, of us, of, you know, our families. And I just couldn't imagine anyone else not seeing that, or not respecting that, or not giving kids the amount of love that they deserve or even need.
Yeah, they're our future. They're the future of our future generations, our future politicians, their future leaders. And we have to create a safe, welcoming, empathic environment for them, an environment where they're going to grow. And even with the situation with you as a teaching a volleyball class, what you modeled for Damon was empathy and trying to understand that not every life is sometimes illusion posing as truth. What you see is not always what's going on. And for me as an educator, I tell my students, I don't know what challenges you're dealing with outside of the classroom. So what I'm going to do is create a welcoming, as stress-free of environment as I can, so that we can learn, we can have some fun. And you can, for whatever time I have you, you have a 50 to 75 minute respite from whatever else is going on in your life. So know that when you come into my classroom, it's going to be a safe place for you to learn, to grow, and to have a little fun in the process.
I love that. But your kids love that too, probably.
Oh yeah. I tell my students, I said, they pay me for this. I have so much fun with you, and they pay me. And I said, I would probably do this for nothing, because I just enjoy being a part of your lives. And hopefully what you learn from me and what we learn from each other is going to help all of us grow. They don't get enough credit for the inspiration that they give us and for the inspiration they give us to continue to grow and to evolve and challenge ourselves. Again, let's shifting gears for a bit. For those who may not have tuned into our first podcast when it dropped in December, tell us about the Devon Taylor podcast, how you believe it's evolved since the last time that we spoke.
Absolutely. So for me, the Devon Taylor podcast is, it's my opportunity to share with the world what I've learned since I've become a parent, an author, a public speaker, just kind of my experience in this journey of becoming an artist, essentially. But more at the root of it, it's more so that we all have a story. That is like the one thing that I want to drive home. When you're coming to the Devon Taylor podcast, if you're listening to any of the episodes, if you're catching one of the guests that have been on the show, it's all about telling a story, and specifically stories that just resonate with the world and situations people may be going through. And so that's kind of how I imagined it. You know, initially when I started the podcast, it was more so just to put myself out there on a different level, have a voice for myself. And it's naturally just kind of become this thing where I have guests that have these amazing stories and amazing lives and just amazing advice for anyone that's listening. And I couldn't be more proud. I'm super grateful is what I really want to say. I'm super grateful. Like the last episode that I had a guest on, his name was Kira, and he's the CEO of Informed, which is a company that is trying to reduce the noise in how we consume news. And how he found me was reaching out on LinkedIn and setting up an interview. But as I was reading up on him and preparing for the interview, I was like, oh my God, how does this person even find the Devon Taylor podcast? What? Is this real? Like, and so, you know, as I was doing the interview and he was talking, he had mentioned like, oh, I watched a few episodes and I loved this episode or that episode. And I'm just like, you watched my show? It felt so good to hear someone appreciate what you're doing. And surreal at the same time. There was a part of me that didn't believe that he could find me, because now I have a podcast and people can hear my voice. You know, they can actually find the person. But it was one of those moments where it really solidified to me that what we're doing, you know, as podcasters in this world, when we're deciding to put our voice out there and we're deciding to, you know, say, you know, take a stand in this or say that, or just really, you know, try to create a platform for ourselves, we're essentially putting ourselves out there in such a broad way and giving ourselves that space to really tell the stories that we want to tell. And so I think in that moment, it just gave me that much more power, that much more confidence to keep doing what I'm doing and continue to share these stories that I've been able to come across, and, you know, the interviews that I've had, like yours and Kira's, and, you know, just the many guests that I've had. It's been an amazing experience to not just get to know the guests, but allow the guests to just tell their stories, have a platform, and kind of just see the reaction from that. So I would say if you're coming to the Devon Taylor podcast, it's a definite way to get to know me, because I'm going to express my opinion, what I think about things. But it's also a place where you're going to meet some pretty great people who have some pretty great stories that could really change your life or help, you know, alter what you may be going through or what you may think in that moment, and just help you find the light at the end of the tunnel. So that's how I would describe it. Like I said, it's evolved into that on its own, and I'm just continuing to push forward with that. Sometimes I won't have a guest and I'll just speak on topics. I've been really, really called to speak on the Gaza-Palestine situation, especially I don't know if anyone knows Miss Rachel, but she's like a little, I have kids, so she's like a little character. She's a woman, but she plays a character that basically speaks to children and sings songs. She's just a really lovely woman. Just hearing her speak and use her platform for such a good cause. She's getting backlash left and right, but still staying firm in what she believes in, which is super inspirational to me and kind of where I want to take my next episode with the podcast. So if you're interested in hearing about any of that stuff or learning about any of the guests, that's what you're going to get on the Devon Taylor podcast. So.
It sounds like it's just a wide variety of topics. And I think with any podcast, it should evolve. I mean, where we start out with the podcast isn't necessarily where we're going to end up because our preferences change, the world changes, and we have to respond to that, I think, in kind. But yeah, I had a great experience being a guest on your podcast. It was just a fun experience. You create such a great platform for everybody's stories to just come out. And I know it was an enjoyable time for me, and I really value the time that we spent together.
Likewise, I loved your episode, and sometimes I'll even go back and listen to the episodes or listen to the clips from the episode to get inspired because, you know, like your episode, you know, you talked about some pretty deep stuff and some pretty heavy stuff. And I draw a very similar comparison to what you were speaking about. And sometimes it's really not refreshing, but it feels super supportive when you hear somebody else go through something that you've gone through and them find a way out of it. You know what I mean? Or find a way to deal with it or find a way to find peace with it. That part you shared was super inspirational to me, but also super helpful because there have been a lot of moments where I've found it hard to continue to go or found it hard to get over something. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that you were a guest. I'm grateful that my listeners got to hear your story. I'm grateful that it's, like you said, continuing to evolve. And I love the idea of having one topic and sticking to that and that being the main thing. But I guess just the way that it's happened, it hasn't really been that. It's been more so just like, all right, what are we feeling this week? What are we deciding to talk about this week? Who's the guest this week? How can we cater to them this week? And that's just really worked out for, you know, just me and being a creative and being happy with what I'm doing. You know, I think I would love to have millions and millions and millions of views, but my goal isn't to be viewed a million times. My goal is to change one life at a time. And if I'm doing that, then that's all that matters to me. So, yeah.
And that's the same way that I feel too. A million views isn't as important to me as what I do having an impact at least one person. And if we can do that, then we have a successful venture.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, when I have guests come on and they're telling me they watched this episode or that, and they love this and that, that to me is the confirmation I need. You know, people will get out of whatever content that you're consuming, you'll get what you need out of it. If you're coming to my podcast or even your podcast specifically, you're going to get exactly what you need from those episodes that you're watching because you're watching it for a reason and we're here for a positive reason. So,
Absolutely. One of my last questions for you today, Devon, is if you could leave our listeners with just one thing today, what would that be?
I love this question, and I'm just going to go straight to what I've gone through and what has helped me, which is to follow your heart. When you're faced with a really difficult decision to make in life, and I'm currently caught in one, to be honest. So my best advice is to follow your heart. Go to the place in your heart where you feel you have the most peace. Take some time to yourself. Allow your thoughts to breathe. There's so much distraction in this world and what we're going through. There's so much opposition. There's so much hate, division, war. There's just so much going on. So I feel like when we're caught up in the distractions, we almost become a part of it. Yeah. Versus actually taking that time to ourselves and really just like pulling ourselves away from that negative energy, or I don't even want to call it negative because it is what it is. You know, just the energy of not being within yourself. I feel like when we take ourselves away from that and we just really just kind of go within and take that time. I've been taking moments like going on walks or been going to the gym lately and not even working out, like just going to the gym to go on the massage chairs or in the sauna, just to relax and take those moments to myself, especially when things start to get hard. I feel like following your heart is super important in today's world and in today's environment, because there's a lot going on and it's hard not to get distracted or not feel overwhelmed. So I found it really essential for me to take those moments to myself and to really be with myself when I'm in those moments, because it helps really create better discernment when it comes to making decisions, being there for the kids, making decisions for myself. It just, I'm going to go back to that, being a better person. Yeah. So I just hope really people are doing that for themselves. I don't know if that's like a norm, like people, you know, will take time to themselves or be with themselves for a little bit. I know it's hard too, because it can be boring or it can be lonely, but I feel like it's just super essential at this point in our lives to really just follow your heart, take that time to yourself, and just take a moment, be with you and only you.
And you know, if you can be with yourself enough where you quiet the internal chatter in your mind, you realize that all the answers you need are within you anyway. Right. And, you know, taking that time, I think, allows us to figure that out and find that out. Plus, and I've said this on recent podcasts, taking time for ourselves is a form of self-love. And if we can't love ourselves, it's going to be hard to love anybody else.
Amen.
And so I'm with you on those takeaways, Devon, and it's something that I instill in my students, and I try to make that a practice every day of my life.
I love that. I feel like it's that time, and you know, things don't seem to be slowing down. So I think it'd be really good for us to slow it down ourselves.
I agree. My last question, people want to get in touch with you, subscribe to your podcast, buy your books. What's the best way for them to do that, Devon?
So you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the same handle, Devon Taylor Author. I also have a website if you want to check out the book and all the merchandise, like the sweater or the posters behind me, at devontaylorauthor.com. I'm on Facebook, Devon Taylor Books and Merchandise. You can check out the podcast on any streaming platform, Apple Podcast, Spotify, any of those. Usually we release an episode every Monday. I want to say around 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you want to check out the newest episode, that's usually when it's released. If you guys want to get in contact with me, I would say Instagram is probably the best way. Send me a message and let's talk. I love when people reach out and tell me if they've heard my story over a podcast or they got to hear my speech, how it inspired them, and just making connections that way. If anyone feels called to, I'm super receptive and I love to have conversations like that. So
thank you, Devon. And thank you again for just being such a wonderful guest contributor to the podcast. I enjoyed our conversation. And we're going to have to figure out a part three down the road.
Yeah, I love this. It comes so natural when I'm talking to you. And like you said to me about creating a great platform, you do the same. And it just feels natural. And I feel like I know you so much more deeper than, you know, just these last few times we've met. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your platform. I appreciate you for even giving me the space to speak and tell my story in a more deeper way. And yeah, thank you. I appreciate this.
Thank you for what you're bringing to the world, Devon, and what you're contributing to the world.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.